My 10 is Taiwo
Okay, yeah,
Awoniyi. What?
now you're taking the mic,
You
dude.
said,
What,
hold
bro?
on, hold on. You said that all 10 of these strikers can lead the line and get you top four.
Dude, this guy has like 12 Premier League goals.
Bro, yeah, for Forest, dude. Like, nah, you're talking.
Exactly. For Forest.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Real Football Podcast. We're here remotely bringing you the Phil Foden episode. It's episode number 47, everybody. Oh. We're running another three-man pod this week. Miles is very tied up with work, but it's okay. We still love him, as always. Mm-hmm. And, boys, we have a lot of topics to get into. We had some FA Cup fixtures that delivered us some interesting topics, especially from my team. Arsenal with a big win in the title race. Liverpool with a big loss in the title race. And then, including our FPL roundup, we're also bringing you our top 10 strikers in the Premier League list. But first, boys, at the top of my Zoom screen, this is the one and only Blake Talbis.
Hello.
And at the bottom is Antoine.
Hello, everybody.
How are we feeling, boys?
Better than ever. I'm not going to lie. If we're talking football-wise, I'm up. I'm up.
That's fair. I probably could be better. Football-wise, all right, but other sports, not so much, but it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, you're back on the Arsenal hype train now over the Leafs, eh?
I think I am. You know me, I'm the most reactionary fan you'll ever meet. So when one team's riding and the other team isn't, I tend to not jump ship. I ain't no bandwagon, but I tend to put my love just a little bit more into the team that's doing better. But like I said, this Arsenal team, like, I don't know, I'm smelling some title potential here. Like, I really am. It's such a mental shit.
This time last year, he was saying they're out. It's not happening.
Well, it's just such a mental shift. I know City has the two games in hand, and now we're four up on them, but it's just that mental shift of seeing us in first. We are first, and we are 4 points clear of them. No matter what, that is an undeniable fact. City have to win those games to bounce above us. So the fact that we can see ourselves in first, we know we're in first, it's in our hands, we don't need to worry about City, just win the games and hopefully they lose. It's not the worst place to be. It's not the worst.
In an hour's time, City kick off against Brighton, and then the rest of their fixtures this year are Forest, Wolves, Fulham, Spurs, and West Ham.
It's so funny. I keep seeing online that like Spurs can decide Arsenal's title, and I'm like, yeah, they really can.
Who wins the title really altogether? Because they play City, Liverpool, and Arsenal.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
It'd be kind of weird. Like, do you think they're going to go for it? Like, I don't know.
I would hope so.
Because then by game week 37, it's the second last game of the season. For them, they could already have top four wrapped up. They're not really playing for anything by then.
True.
So, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting debate. I mean, I think at the end of the day, Spurs fans and not the fans, the players more so, will probably care more about them getting top four than like, oh, we need to beat Arsenal and like beat City because we don't want Arsenal to win the league. Like, I think the players, like, and the manager for sure is going to be focusing on the fact that don't think about that aspect of it. If you beat them, like, you're canceling their hopes of winning the league. Just, they want top four. They don't care about us right now.
Yeah. Even though it's a rivalry, but North London Derby still is a pretty big thing. So I don't expect them to not go hard, you know?
Fair. No, it'll be crazy. Yeah. It'll be crazy. When is that, by the way? I don't even know.
You play Spurs.
Beginning May?
Hold up here. The 28th of April.
Oh.
So this Sunday.
Blake's jaw just dropped.
I'm surprised at that.
This Sunday is Spurs away?
Yep.
Oh no.
It's your next game, bro.
Bro, so you're telling me the Leafs are about to be 3-1 down against Boston on Saturday. I'm going to the Jays game on Friday. So that's another potential L because they're playing the Dodgers, and then Arsenal can be out of the title race on Sunday.
It's sports for you.
Anyway. Let's get into some analysis before I start crying. But
Okay. Do you want to start with your team's big performance?
Sure. We're already on the topic. That's fine.
Okay. So Arsenal with a big dub, 5-0 over Chelsea. Some very contrasting conversations between the two clubs. The gap between you two are now 30 points, which might be the biggest it's ever been in Premier League history. Don't quote me. But I was listening to some Chelsea fans talk about this game, and they said, I've never, ever seen, even thinking about before the Abramovich days, where the gap between Chelsea and Arsenal have been this big.
It's sad, honestly. It's sad.
Yeah, no, for sure. Even like the darker Wenger and the transition eras, like we weren't, I don't know, Chelsea were not their peak either at that time. So the gap really wasn't that vast. But now it's like, whoa, you look player for player and, you know, maybe they'll like Palmer can beat out one of the wingers or the midfielders, whatever. But just the system that each team plays and the mentality and the vibes around each team is just so, like you said, contrastingly different. Like it's really a sight to see and behold when such a giant like Chelsea Football Club are like so undeniably mid. There's nothing more to say about it. Like they go into every game and yeah, they still are Chelsea and it's kind of scary, but man, you don't expect them to win. You don't. Like they play and they act and they hold themselves like a mid-table club.
Mm-hmm.
Julian, when you talk about Manchester United players, or Manchester United, you say that it's not the manager that's at fault, it's the players, their mentality, everything. Would you tend to agree when talking about Chelsea?
I don't know, man. Like, I've heard a lot of... The one difference between, like, a Pochettino and a Ten Hag is that Pochettino got crazy investment in the summer. And you could say all you want about like, oh, maybe he didn't have as much say on that. Maybe he wanted like a big striker. Maybe he didn't get it. Maybe he didn't want a Caicedo, whatever. But the fact is, Chelsea has spent over like £1 billion over the last year and a little bit. And they're still at this point. Of course, a lot of those players are young. They're inexperienced. They don't have the right hand on their shoulders. But like at a certain point, you just got to look at the investment and be like, we just can't be in this spot. With Ten Hag, it's like, yeah, like the players are cool. They're good on paper. Some of them have been here for like 5+ years and have proven over and over again they don't deserve to be here. You can't say that about Chelsea, at least. So I think I think there's definitely more potential to like a. I don't think you can say with Chelsea that's like a systematic players issue quite yet. Bring another manager, maybe he fails too, and then you can start having that conversation. But yeah, Poch is. He's Tottenham too. Like he's Spurs. It was always like a weird appointment to me.
Yeah, it was weird. Know? It's always weird when players or managers transfer to rival clubs. I thought it was going to go pretty well for them, honestly.
Never go well.
Because Poch. Like he's been to the Champions League final. He instills his tactics onto the squad, and it usually works. I remember when he was at Southampton, there was a stat that like they were the top pressing team in the league. So I don't know why I'm not seeing that translation when talking about Chelsea, but
I think at Southampton and at Spurs, he had a lot more control. Like there wasn't like, you know, when they brought in someone, it was because Poch gave the green light and he had a lot more input on the recruitment strategy. And he wouldn't feel bad about like benching a player because the club spent 100 M's on him, you know, with Chelsea, you don't really get that. I think Boley, Agbali, like their leadership kind of dips their toes in the water a little too much.
Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
That leads to the managers just not having the power that he should.
Well, yeah, I feel 100%. Like it also has to, you already pointed to this, but the recruitment just has to be questioned so much just because we've talked about this before with Hoyland and with players like Arsenal players like Pepe and you know, any younger player that comes in, you're like, give him a couple years, but you spend big money on them. We've had this conversation. Miles is usually on my side with this too, because it usually does come back to Hoyland. But when you spend that much on a player, they need to perform almost immediately because then it just drags on, and then you get cases like Nicholas Jackson, who didn't cost that much money, but you still spent a decent amount of change on him, who is struggling, and the pressure is on him every game, and it just confounds and piles up. And same with the midfield. Yeah. Caicedo has not been good this season. Enzo's been fine.
Remember Romeo Lavia, boys?
Remember Romeo Lavia, exactly.
Fucking hell.
And back to Enzo, too. Like, the last three games, I know it's ratings, but, like, he's had, like, a 5.9, a 5.9, and, like, a 4.7. I don't know what app this was, but it just shows you, like, when you spend this amount of money on these young players, well, sometimes you need to, like, it's a good strategy to make your team better, but, man, if they don't perform, not only does it reflect badly on the player, but it reflects badly on the club, and then those combine to just, like, completely ruin any of the building and the rebuild that you've been doing, because there's so many outside factors that aren't just the player performance. It's like, okay, the player's playing bad, so let's question the manager, then let's question the owners, and let's question the club as a whole. You know what I mean? Like, it all just adds up.
Yeah.
Kind of like to compare Chelsea right now to PSG when Pochettino were in, because it's kind of the same situation as to where the owners are kind of having too much of a say, you know? Like, back when Poch was at PSG, it was that whole thing about signing all superstars, and Khelaifi was putting such an impact, putting such emphasis on winning the Champions League. And I feel like Boli is kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is why we're seeing both teams, well, PSG back then and Chelsea right now, kind of flop, you know?
Yeah.
The recruitment has been so bad. I'm expecting Boli one of these days to just go down to the dugout himself. Like, it's crazy.
Well, it's
there's nothing wrong with buying so many young players. It's kind of going back to your point, Blake.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you got to supplement those young players with some leadership in your squad. I think one of Chelsea's best signings over the past couple of years was Thiago Silva.
Thiago Silva, yep.
And, like, he was really good at times. He's kind of falling off a little bit now, but he brought, like, a leadership and a personality to the team that, like, they really, really needed.
Won the Champions League.
Won the Champions League.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you had Conte in that team who had good experience as well. Like, you had like, some certain, like, rocks in there, too. The only experience they had last year were, like a Aubameyang, like, kind of like some rotten apples. And they got rid of those rotten apples, good. But then they didn't really bring in, like, a leadership personality this summer. It was all just young players, no experience, don't know how to handle the pressure, you know?
No, and that's
why,
susceptible to what?
Sorry. That's why, like, as much as we've been shitting on him lately, Casemiro has been a great signing for United, because he does bring that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That leadership.
Well, and just the last thing on Chelsea, and then we can move on. But you're right. Like, Casemiro, Thiago Silva, these players provide more than just their ability on the field, which is why the recruitment should be so questioned. Because why, over the last, what, 2 years, has Chelsea only bought, and, like, it seems like, players under 22 and 23? I understand that's their goal. They're trying to rebuild and they want a youth focused system going forward, which is fine, but you need some established skill and quality in the team to help prove that these young players deserve to be in the spot they're in. They can't just do it by themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been a good Chelsea conversation. I feel like we haven't had a good Chelsea conversation.
Yeah, no, it has been good. Weeks. I mean, of course, it came after.
It's kind
Arsenal.
Of a theme with them. Like, there's only so much you can say on them. But, like,
yeah, but yeah. I quickly back to the actual game though. I want to talk about Martin Odegaard, which is not something that is out of the ordinary. But wow, what a player! Like, it's just insane. Like, some of the passes that he makes. It's like, what's that game? You know, you draw the line and it goes to the, it's like, it was like a mobile game.
Score Hero.
Score Hero.
Dude, it's insane. Like, not only is he one of the silkiest players, like, he's so good at getting out of tight positions and moving past players and body feints and all this stuff. But his vision and his ability to manipulate the ball, not as good as Trent, obviously, but it's really, really insane. It's the words can't describe how much I love him. He's just so talented, and man, I think he's the second best midfielder. Like, him, it's him and De Bruyne, and I don't think anyone's close at this point. Maybe Rodri, but they play different. Whatever.
Little shout out to Kai Havertz, Bleak.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny though is, was it this game? Yeah, I think it was this. Like, he didn't have the most amazing game. Like, he kind of missed a couple chances, and he wasn't super influential as he could have been, but he scored two really nice goals, and it just shows you, like, at some point, you don't need to be on your finest form if you just finish your chances. And, like, the best strikers, like Haaland, like, all these guys can do that. And we look at the game, oh, they scored two, great. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he has 11 goals this season. He has the same amount of non-penalty goals as Cole Palmer. So take that information as you will. But, yeah, the vibe around Arsenal is really good. There's a big game on the weekend now, apparently, which I didn't even fucking know about. So that'll be fun. But the vibe is good. The vibe is good. We played amazing. The defense was great. I don't know. It's just one of those games, like, near the end of the season. Like, I feel like it happened last year where, let's talk about Arsenal. Oh, they won, like, 3-0. Okay, let's move on. It's kind of one of those ones. It was nice that it was against Chelsea, for sure.
There's one more point I want to add to this. There's been, since I met you boys, like a year and a half ago now?
Almost two, but yeah.
Almost 2 years. Well.
Jesus Christ, man. There's been, like, certain chapters in football that, like, we kind of missed. The big one is, like, the Arsenal banter era. You know, like, if we knew each other then, like how different things would be and how much fun that would have been. Another big era we missed was, like, Chelsea being good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when we're in the studio sometimes, I could see visibly on your face, Blake, on Miles's face, like, the hate you have towards Tottenham and the bias and, like, the rivalry, you know? Like, you hate them. Because, like, they're low-key, like, you know, like, not so good, but, like, they're closer to you guys. Chelsea have been so shit since we've met that, like, I actively couldn't tell you guys are rivals because, like, we feel bad for them. Like, we don't even be hating on them. We just feel bad for them. So there hasn't been, like, that rivalry kind of hate that I see you or Miles have towards them. Plus, there's a thing with your dad, too.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was just about to bring that up. Like, you literally, you said it perfectly. My dad turned on the FA Cup game. This is, like, the first game he's watched in, like, about a month. Like, it's at that point where it's like, what's the point of him watching, right? I understand it. We've all been there with our
teams.
Honestly,
fair. Like, that's so fair.
Yeah, so he turned it on. He's like, all right, we're playing not bad. And then they get scored on. He's like, I'm not surprised. And he definitely didn't watch the Arsenal game. I know that for sure. But, yeah, they're just not good. They're mid-table. Like, they're renowned and regarded by the rest of the Premier League as a mid-table side because that is what they are.
Speaking of FA Cup?
I think that's a great transition. Let's move to that game. Because Chelsea actually didn't play bad
in
that game. Mm-hmm. They created some chances. But fine margins. It's back to the striker conversation we were having. Sometimes shit like that can cost you. And we saw that here.
Why did he cut back? Why didn't he just shoot?
It's like Sterling. It's like Sterling at the World Cup. Why did he cut it back?
So once again,
why didn't he cut it back?
And I swear, maybe he's just shit. I'm telling you, there is a mental thing behind that because no striker in that position is like, let me cut it back. There's a mental problem there where he wants to do so well that he's like overthinking things. And that's what I mean about these young players, man. You need establishment to help them prove that they can do things. And he proved that he cannot do things.
He's also getting clowned everywhere on social media. So exactly. I feel like that definitely has something to do with his mental. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys seen like the edits, but there's like AI interviews of players. Yeah. They're like, who's the best striker you've ever played against? Honestly, honestly, Nicholas Jackson is such a good player.
Oh, goodness.
Like the Ben Foster one? Yeah, yeah. You've seen the one where like, how big does the goal have to be for Nicholas Jackson to score? And it's like 700%.
So funny. Those are funny, though. Those are funny.
Yeah, I just don't understand why Chelsea spent so much money last summer and didn't go out there to buy a world-class striker.
I saw that video.
You spent $115 on Caicedo.
I saw that too.
Victor Osimhen was quoted on just around that price. And you could have gone out and got him. And Victor Osimhen isn't having the best season. But if you gave him those chances against City, he's burying a few of those.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and think about it. They get an FA Cup. They won the FA Cup, dude. They're like they're the Arsenal from 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Mid-table, but won an FA Cup, so the vibes and
suddenly their season is so bad.
The project
anymore.
Seems a little more upbringing than it could have been because of that one FA Cup win. Like that could have been them, but it wasn't. So now, like, their whole system is still, there's so many questions behind it.
Same thing with United. If they win the FA Cup, it's the different sides of the story.
I don't know. I think that one's really different. I think still, we can go to United now if you want. Like, that's
I don't know where to start with them, boys. Did you guys watch the game?
Oh, I did. Well,
I did when they scored.
Yeah, same.
But I missed a good bit.
Yeah, same.
Oh my god, dude.
It's
absolutely disgraceful.
I know you want us to win the league. Like, Julian, I know you want, as a United fan, you want Arsenal to win the league. And I appreciate your support, but there's just something about hate watching United. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It fills my soul.
No, I'll tell you what it is, Blake, because it delivers every single time. That's if true. you hate watch City, but hate watching City sucks because they win every single time. United delivers, bro. They feed into your hate.
He's not wrong.
Oh, no way Coventry makes a 3-3. Oh, it's 3-3. dumb, bro. I didn't.
It's all wrong, Julian.
So I was at the gym. I was at the gym with my girlfriend while this game was on. And then I see, oh, United's up 3-0. Bet. I can actually relax now. And then, like, 10 minutes later, my girl comes up to me and says, like, hey, it's 3-2. What? 3-2. And so then I have the game in my ear. And then I find out, I'm, like, in the middle of my set. And I'm, like, I look over her and say, it's fucking 3-3. They did it. These bastards did it. They choked again. And then... fucking hell. And then we're in the car, and then it's the end of extra time, and there's like the last attack of the game, and they make it 4-3, and I turned off my phone and then I didn't realize it was ruled offside, and then half an hour later I found out we actually did go through three times.
Yeah, that was tough.
The disease watching this team.
It's like so close to being the greatest comeback, like,
In FA Cup history.
Low-key in English football history. Like, it would have been pretty crazy.
Who says otherwise?
Fucking hell, man.
I don't know. That's a good point.
There's a good was it Arsenal Reading? A couple years
back? The 4-4?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, like, I mean...
Was it you coming back or Reading coming back?
We came back.
That was a good one.
But, like, it's Reading, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they were Prem at that time, I think.
True. No, they were. It was Prem. Maybe it wasn't
for a championship side to do that against United.
Insane.
We've seen it multiple times this season, too.
And then they lost at the weekend, too. Like,
and then United leaks two goals against Sheffield.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're just a disaster, innit?
I want to bring the question to you, Julian. Like, I always like doing this because I genuinely enjoy your insight. You're very well spoken in general, but especially about your team.
Oh, Blake.
I know it's a mentality thing, and you talked about it so many times, and I understand that, and I think all football fans understand that, but how do these guys, these Manchester United players, not just dig in for 30 fucking minutes and win the game against a team like Holland? Like, I just don't understand. So just explain it to me, because I don't understand. I genuinely don't.
Let me pull it up. So it's the most... just this season, they've conceded...
And I saw your TikTok,
goals
by the way.
I appreciate that, Blake. Let me say it again. They conceded 2 in 4 minutes to Copenhagen, 2 in 4 minutes to Bayern, 2 in 2 minutes to Liverpool, 2 in 2 to Chelsea, 2 in 5 to Wolves, 2 in 5 to Villa, 2 in 5 to Bournemouth, 2 in 8 to Newcastle, 2 in 10 to Newport.
Oh my
god! And 3 in 20 to Coventry.
Just gets worse and worse.
Like, it's not just like a one time thing. Like, Coventry just got like, you know, some crazy motivation, and it just happened one time. It was like, this is like a repeat offense through the season, where like no other team kind of has this record up and down every league. So like, I don't understand how they keep doing this. I don't know how this gets so like ingrained in them. I think it's just like a lot of them were around for Mourinho, and Mourinho kind of like was a reality check for a lot of them, pushed them hard, and then made them feel like shit when they weren't hard, because, you know, he was a perfectionist. It's Jose Mourinho,
right?
And a lot of them wanted him out because of that. And then they got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who was a polar opposite to Mourinho. He was kind of like a father figure. He treated them like a friend. He didn't really like push them as hard. He kind of upheld a culture of
positivity.
Oh my God, what's the word? Yeah, of like complacentness.
Uh-huh.
Of complacency, sorry.
Complacency.
So then you go from that to go from Ollie. So then between those two like eras at United, you kind of have a group of like mentally weak millionaires who had known basically nothing but losing by then. So then you had Ralph Rangnick come in, who's now linked to the Bayern job, oddly enough. It's almost like he actually is a good manager.
Yeah.
Then you had Ralph Rangnick come in, and then he tried pushing them, but then United players just rejected him. And then you had Ten Hag come in, who was good at the start because he can be like nice to them. But he is also a perfectionist. So it's kind of, you know, they've kind of got tired of him this season, and, you know, their true selves are coming out. You pair that with the fact that a lot of our injuries to players that made us good from last year, you have some of our best players just not showing up this season, and just all that stuff. It's just like, once you get into that, like that negative headspace, once a locker room becomes toxic, once you kind of question like, okay, what am I doing on this team? It's so hard to dig in for them. So hard to dig in for them.
It's also difficult, you know, dealing with a board transition too. It's definitely not easy on the players, for sure. Because you said, Mourinho comes in completely different mentality as Ole, as Rangnick, as Ten Hag. So I feel like it kind of keeps it makes the players a little bit confused. It's hard to change and to adapt to what different coaches want.
It reminds me so much of when Rangnick was here, and when he tried pushing the players, but the players just refused.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there's also the fact that a lot of them. Like a lot of our players that are like starters for us right now wouldn't actually be starters if everyone is healthy. And I think a lot of them know that they're probably going to go in the summer. A lot of them know that like if Ten Hag survives, I'm probably not going to survive. I'm probably surplus to requirements if the man ahead of me was healthy. And kind of having that in the back of your mind kind of makes you go like, maybe I can still keep collecting my 200K a week if this manager isn't here. You know, it's just, I think it was Roy Keane that said leopards don't change their spots. So there is a certain responsibility of the manager to like uphold a culture of like perfectionism, like Pep at City or somewhat. But when the players have mediocrity, like ingrained in their heads, like the United players do, nobody can change it. Nobody can. If we had Pep on this team, he's not saving us. Klopp's not saving us. Nobody's saving us, bro. It's just these players that have to go. And I hope our board recognizes that and doesn't take the easy way out to sack Ten Hag. Anyways, that's my eighth time in 10 weeks explaining that, but
yeah. Julian every week is talking about that. But hey, I'm okay, not complaining. Bro, the amount of knowledge I've gained from this guy is insane.
Mm-hmm.
What, say that again?
I said the amount of United knowledge that I've gained from you is insane. And it, I'm not complaining. Because then when you guys are up, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I was there for the lowest points.
That's crazy. I was there. It's crazy. It's insane.
You know what? I was watching Coventry score their third goal, and all I could think was Blake going, you know, the losing makes the winning so much better. I was like, I finally got it, bro. I finally got it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, there was another big loss. There was another big loss, eh?
There was another big loss.
On the weekend?
There was
another big loss.
Liverpool have resigned themselves from the title race, ladies and gentlemen.
Two big losses in a row,
actually. Let me pull up the table now, but like it's basically done out.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they played Crystal Palace on the weekend. Lost 1-0. By the way, Crystal Palace, we shouldn't ignore what they're doing, because lately, since their new manager came in,
mm-hmm.
it's been solid. Yeah, yeah, it's been solid.
Joaquin Anderson's really been a rock for real.
And we're not complaining because we have almost all their assets on FPL.
Oliver Glasner, bro.
Oliver Glasner. He's what a name. Austrian, is what a he?
Name. He is. I think he's German. No, he's Austrian.
Yeah, it's just that Red Bull mentality, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's been absolutely feasting with Crystal Palace. Let me see.
Absolutely. He's using the players very well. Roy Hodgson wasn't doing a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Villarreal.
They're up to 14th now, but like they're like a ones to watch next year, you know?
Oh, 100%.
They could have like a Villa kind of season.
It's so exciting.
So Liverpool are on 74 points, 1 point ahead of Man City, who have 2 games in hand, including today's game.
Ouch.
So they could be overtaken in like an hour. And they're 3 points behind Arsenal. So you guys are probably clear from Liverpool. Just Man City got to worry about, which means we're kind of down to 2 in the title race.
Yeah, and
just like last year.
Yep.
Well, that's... Yep. I draw a lot of parallels to Liverpool this year as to Arsenal last year. Not in the way they play or their how they're made up or anything like that. Just the inexperience within the team. Because we talked about that last week with Arsenal tumbling out of the Champions League and how the more experienced Bayern team just showed that. Simple as that. They showed that they had more experience. With Liverpool, the core players that have won you the Champions League and the Premier League are still there. Your Salahs, your Alissons, he's been hurt, sure, and your Van Dijks. 3 world-class players, undisputedly, one, like 3 of the best players of the generation as well, and they've been there and they've won you trophies. The rest of the team is made up of a midfield 3 that, sure, McAllister has a World Cup, but isn't proven in the Prem, neither are the other 2. You have a striker that's inconsistent and isn't really doing much if he's not scoring. Sure, he can have some decent hold-up play. He make good runs, make space, but it's not like a Gabriel Jesus or a Hoyland or a, I don't know, even like an Isaac where you just their impact can go farther than just scoring. And then, yeah, your goalie's hurt, right? So there's just a lot. There's some injury troubles and there's some inexperience. And I think it's all catching up to them. And I think the weight of Klopp's final season is also catching up to them too, because there's just a lot kind of confounding and going wrong for this Liverpool team.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were talking about it earlier in the season. It's fluky. It seemed fluky because they don't seem like such a good team on paper because of that inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
Klopp made it work, but like Arsenal last year at the end of the season, it's just capitulating.
Oh my God, it was brutal.
Jared Brandt, wait.
Oh, brutal. Oh
like it was God. Like ping pong.
And Allison, like, yeah, you said their keeper has been hurt, but like he was back this week and like he had a rotter against Everton, bro. He's terrible.
Yeah, it's obviously I'm okay with it as an Arsenal fan. I'm fine with the downfall. It's easier for me to hate watch only one team than 2, but I don't know if they continue this next year because Klopp is gone and a new system comes in place.
It's
with new
be
players.
Really interesting.
It's going to be super interesting. Like Tottenham's going to get better. United, you would think, are going to get better. Villa are going to be on the up. You'd like to think City and Arsenal stay 1-2 at least, like fighting for those top 2 places.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea's going to be Chelsea.
Can Liverpool stay? Like, what did you say, Crystal Palace? Is that what you said?
Chelsea's going to be Chelsea.
Chelsea's going to be Chelsea, sure. But you know what I mean? Like, there's genuine questions that need to be asked about this Liverpool team. They've shown the frailty, which is fine. Like, no one expected them to win anything this season. Maybe a Europa League, sure, but that's fine. Like, they weren't expected to win. It sucks that they were in the title race and they lost, especially to Everton, the Merseyside derby. That's crazy.
At Goodison Park, bro. That
at Goodison
sucks.
Is crazy. But
you guys know they hadn't won against Liverpool at Goodison Park in 14 years?
Really?
14 Holy. Years.
Oh, yeah. The last time, like, guess who's playing for Everton the last time they won?
Mick Arteta?
Leighton Baines.
Big Mick. Leighton Baines probably was playing too. You know what? He probably was playing too.
Streets will never forget. Bro.
His free kicks. Oh my God. On FIFA. Crazy. But no, anyway.
FIFA
like
15 players will never forget.
Look, there's a reality where Liverpool challenge for the title again next season. For sure. For sure. But there's also a reality where like they are a bottom, not a bottom feeder, but a bottom feeder in the top 6 trying to get 4th place because it hasn't worked out for them. So
kind
I don't
of
know.
Going back to the Liverpool that existed before Klopp.
Because mm-hmm.
that's who they were. Like for most of our lives, Liverpool have, you know, they've just been a decent little team, but mm-hmm. like nothing crazy.
Salah and Van Dijk are not prime Salah and Van Dijk. Like let's just be honest, right?
There's even chance of Salah leaving this season.
Pardon me?
Yeah, true. If he goes to like a Saudi.
Who are you talking about?
If Salah leaves.
Oh yeah.
Because then who do they replace him with?
Well, yeah, if Salah leaves, then it's then you're really everything that you've done is put in question, like even more question. Then you really got to sit back and think about what the next steps are.
Yeah. He's 31. Let me see when his contract runs out. But yeah, that's a very good point, actually.
Well, and just think about, like, even in the Arsenal game, remember that miscommunication between Alisson and Van Dijk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That led to the Martinelli goal or whatever? Doesn't matter. But again, like, those two players, I just talked about how experienced they are. They win you the Champions League. They won you the Premier League. Those are the players that'll pick up the young ones. Those two were a huge reason why Arsenal didn't lose that game. So, I don't know. It's
Mo Salah this summer only has 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah.
If they want money off of him. If they want money off of him.
Exactly. So it's going to become an Mbappe situation, and that's not good.
Al-Ittihad had offered, like, let me see. They offered £150 million for Mo Salah last summer.
Insane. Yeah.
Yeah, if you want any kind of return like that, bro, this is kind of summer to sell. Plus, he's 31 already.
Yeah, Liverpool's definitely in an interesting transition period. Semi-transition
They're
going to
be
period.
Very interesting next year. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Is Klopp kind of getting off the bandwagon at the right time?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like he knew.
Yeah, he seems like visibly like... I was looking at interviews from him from like 2020. He looks like 10 years younger then. Like,
well, also, did you see after the second goal came in, Klopp was smiling?
Did he?
Yeah.
The second goal from DCL.
Before the game, he was saying that he wasn't going to get mad. It's his last Goodison. It's his last Merseyside derby. And then after the first goal, he's furious. So... And then after the second, he's smiling. It's kind of it's
Klopp
for you, isn't it?
Really? I would never believe that.
Insane.
So it's to me, this is exactly like the Arsene Wenger 1,000th game. Do you remember that was the Chelsea 6-0 game? So we got revenge for that. Big up Arsenal. It's Klopp's last Merseyside derby, and the players go out there and they kind of get their shit ran. Everton were by far the better team.
Sean Dyche ball.
Like, yeah. Like, it's insane, right? It's a mental obstacle when that kind of game with all the pressure and, again, the outside factors, a theme of today, that game was more than just any Merseyside derby. That game was not only to stay in the title race, but Klopp's final goodbye in one of the fiercest derbies in the Prem, the Merseyside derby. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's been dominated, but, you know, there's been some fun Merseyside derbies over the Klopp era, and they completely fucked it up. And for Klopp to have to go back in the dressing room and talk to the boys, he must be disappointed. And they're also for sure disappointed. But to have a performance like that in one of Klopp's farewell goodbye games that means definitely a lot to him just shows the mental frailty of the team.
Oh, 100%.
Damn. You gotta feel bad. But not really.
It's like, do we really like Klopp?
He's a good manager. I respect him.
He's a good manager.
Him. But like, I don't know if like would be the word.
Yeah.
So you get for fat shaming, motherfucker. Okay, let's talk about Liverpool's rumored replacements. One of them is Ruben Amorim of Sporting. He's been pretty good over there for a couple years now.
Been very good. You know who he would also bring along with him? He'd probably bring Viktor Gyökeres.
Oh, their striker. I never thought of that.
Sorry, say that one more time.
Interesting.
Viktor Gyökeres.
Even hits
I feel
good
like
over
he's
the
Chelsea
phone.
Bound for some reason.
Sorry?
I feel like he's Chelsea bound for some reason. He kind of gives that vibe.
He does give that vibe.
Like Chelsea would spend like 100 M's on him and then he'd flop. Like that kind of sign.
But I also love when the managers bring in the players that they've managed at previous clubs. Like when Xabi Alonso brought in Grimaldo.
Oh, yeah. When he brought in Anthony, what a signing.
This is kind of dumb, but it's such a career mode thing to do. Like,
yeah,
like a career mode.
100%.
Like,
but it works.
It works, bro. It works.
Because imagine, because it's so simple. Why would you want to teach someone completely new when you have someone that's been doing it for however
exactly.
many years?
It's like I always consider it like this in modern day or real world. it's like when all the college students come back and go back to their summer jobs, it's like, why would they take the time to train a new person when they can just get the old farts exactly. who've been here for a while yeah. who come back in the summer? You don't have to train anyone. It's fit right in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The other candidate is Arne Slot, current manager of Feyenoord, who's killing it over there in the Eredivisie.
They're doing well.
Apparently plays a very similar style to Klopp. Prefers a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 formation. Focuses on high pressing.
The goal for the board is to not get someone that plays a completely different style of football than Klopp, because mm-hmm. then that could really ruin them. Because instilling a whole yeah. new set of tactics into a team that's been used to something completely different for the past 7 years, 8 years, could really cost them.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you look long term, it could also benefit them. So it's just whether or not they're ready to take that transitional year and with like low expectations, or if they want to keep like, you know, going for it, which I think they should.
True.
All right. That's already about it on Liverpool.
Can we, is it time for
the second? I heard Blake hinting at a couple of strikers earlier when he was talking about, who were you talking about? Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah.
So, Julian, why don't you introduce our last segment?
I think it's time, boys.
Okay.
I think it's time. All right. So, before this episode, we all created our top 10 strikers in the Premier League list. All right. We're going to go through all of them. We're going to go from 10 down to one person at a time. Okay. And then we're going to talk, we're going to debate, we're going to argue.
And now before this, Blake was saying there's not many elite strikers in the Prem, and I was disagreeing with him.
Because my top seven
is filled with elite strikers.
Top seven of elite is crazy. Like, I must be missing someone, because elite to me is like, you're going to score 20 easily. 20 easily.
Antoine, here we go.
What do you mean, here we go?
Because I told Antoine before the podcast that it's like leave it to Blake to go like, but what is elite?
What is elite? Calvert-Lewin scored 20 goals in the Premier League one season. Is that elite? No, he's not fucking elite. He sucks dick now.
What is all right?
Number 10, boys.
Okay.
Number 10.
Wait, honorable mention.
Hold on. Oh, yeah, sorry, I want to get some honorable mentions.
My bad.
Let me start. We have to honorable mention Son, because he's not a striker, but he's been playing striker, so sure.
I think he is a striker. He's been
Son
playing
is not even on the list,
season.
Not even on the honorable mentions. You know why? Because he's not a striker. He is a winger, and he's played winger his whole
striker.
Career.
This season, he is a striker, bro.
He is not a striker.
So in the same facet, so is Kai Havertz, who's been a striker, and I just want to give some flowers to my boy, who I was very much wrong about at the start of the season, and I apologize to Kai.
Hey, so was Cristiano Ronaldo never a striker with Real Madrid?
He's played striker.
Because he moved...
He played striker,
but he's not known for being
like
a,
6 out of the 8 years he was there, he was a winger.
Okay, whatever, yeah. Dude.
And he's known as a winger. Like, he's not known as a striker.
I also put Nkunku in my honorable mentions because he hasn't played much for Chelsea. But when he has, he's been very good.
What, his like 30 minutes?
I'm one of the biggest Nkunku supporters. I was riding with him when he signed at Chelsea.
Yep, brought him into fantasy.
But,
what a move that was.
I don't know.
Who's on your honorables?
Honorable mentions really is kind of crazy, because when he did play, it wasn't looking too good.
It was looking good.
And was it, though? He scored one goal.
Some of his games were good.
It's not.
Who else is on your honorables?
It shouldn't be compared to the other players on this list.
Interesting. Well, I don't know.
Okay, Antoine, who's on your honorables?
He is a very good player. Honorable? I had Jean-Philippe Mateta. Little shout out this week.
Okay, let's move on to number 10 then.
Okay. Blake, then Antoine, then me. Go.
I have Rasmus at number 10.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow.
Rasmus. I have Rasmus at number 10.
Blake.
I have Rasmus at number 10.
Blake.
I do. Blake. Because all of these nine guys, look, in the most basic terms of football, all of these nine guys above him, I see, can either score more than him or have a bigger impact on the team than he does.
Julian, you have him higher?
Not like too higher, but like it's higher.
He's not.
I just know that because Blake said that, there's going to be one man that's going to be above him. No. And I think that is outrageous. Outrageous.
Wait, Julian, okay, Antoine, who's your 10?
Julian Hoyland isn't even on my list.
Oh, no way.
You didn't even have it as an honorable mention? Does that mean he's below Mateta?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I should have honorable mentioned him. My 10 is Taiwo Awoniyi.
Okay, yeah, you're taking the mid.
You
dude.
Said, what, hold bro? On, hold on. You said that all 10 of these strikers can lead the line and, and get you top four.
Dude, this guy has like 12 Premier League goals.
Bro, yeah, for Forest, dude. Like, nah, you're talking.
Exactly, for Forest.
Bro, he's a Liverpool reject. Like, nah, bro, that's crazy.
Brother, he is a 9 that can hold up the play, score the goals. What more do you want from him?
No, Antoine, that's a little diabolical.
There's like, no just, way you're disagreeing right now.
Top 10 in the league, bro?
Yes.
Maybe this season, maybe if you're going off that, but still, that's crazy.
Even last season, he was balling. It's 2 seasons in a row now. You can't put Hoyland, who scored a couple goals and played half a season. Because Blake, you were emphasizing this. You were talking about this season. I'm sorry, Taiwo Awoniyi is having a better season, objectively, than Rasmus Hoyland.
If Rasmus Hoyland is playing on Forest, I promise you he would bag more goals, okay? Impossible. But United is just the graveyard shift.
Is Chris Wood on your list?
No, very fucking possible. And no, Awoniyi wouldn't have half the goals if he was playing for United this year.
Chris Wood has 12 Premier League goals this season.
Yeah, because that's what I mean. He's a better Awoniyi is a better striker than Chris Wood in my eyes.
It's not saying much, isn't it?
That's a crazy take.
We were talking about this season, and then now you guys are shitting on me for putting Awoniyi in there.
Jesus Christ!
Like that's a bit of a crazy take. Like he's a decent player. I'm not gonna say he's not a he's a cool striker. He's fine, but
he's top 10.
Wait, he only has 6 goals this season. What are you talking about?
All comps.
It's Taiwo Awoniyi, bro.
In the Prem, he has 6 goals in 17 games, which isn't a terrible return.
Look, I said what I said. I will not change my mind. I think he's a better striker.
I said wrong information.
This season.
I'm not changing my mind.
Okay. Drew, who do you have?
I have Jackson, number 10.
Okay, yeah. Ooh. You guys are so
That's
stupid.
Worse.
Like,
That's
what
worse.
Is going on? What
That's
do you mean?
Worse.
What?
That's worse.
He's nowhere near this list. Nowhere near. The only reason he has any shot of being on this list and scoring so many goals this season, so many is like 10, is because like he has good creative players behind him. That's it.
He just...
Like, you put Chris Wood in that Chelsea team, he scores 15 goals. Easy.
I don't know, man. We're talking about Chelsea. But yeah, no, I don't love Jackson, but I figured you guys would have him on your list. Looks like I'm wrong.
Well, okay, sure.
I thought it was going to be controversial because you thought that Jackson should be higher.
No, God, no. God, no. God, no. God, no.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was like, this is going to be a crazy take if I don't even have him on my list. Fair enough, then.
Okay, should I go to my 9?
Go, give me your 9.
I have my Bournemouth boy, Callum Wilson.
At 9?
At number 9.
I understand it a bit. I don't know.
Look, and he's been hurt a little this season. Obviously, Isaac gets the most game time. But Callum Wilson has proven over his time as a Premier League footballer, which again, we went past to, it's about current form, but also I think their repertoire and their record in the league also count. He's been a very good striker and he scored and he was a sole reason as to why Bournemouth were a mainstay in the Premier League. And before they got Isaac, Wilson was a great player for Newcastle as well. So he's my number 9, and I'll love him forever.
I think his time's passed, like personally.
I think so too. But I think I think him at 9 isn't.
I
like
think
he could,
in his best days, he was a top 8 striker in the Prem. Mm-hmm. But like not anymore, bro. It's 2024.
No,
respectfully,
Julian, I disagree with you wholeheartedly. I agree with Blake. Okay. And Callum Wilson is a little bit higher on my list because he just doesn't start for Newcastle. That's who I was talking about earlier when I didn't want to give it away.
I said
because he doesn't start for Newcastle, but he's next year he's moving. This summer he's moving and he's going to prove why he's one of the best strikers.
Where is he moving to?
Any team that needs a striker.
Like West Ham. He could even go to Arsenal.
You wouldn't want him at Arsenal?
No.
He would do good? What?
No. Maybe instead of Nketiah, sure.
Okay, yeah, as a backup.
Yeah, yeah. As a backup, Better than Hoyland, absolutely.
Better than Hoyland, though.
I think he's better than Hoyland.
Get
I think
the
so.
Fuck out. Get the fuck out of here.
I think he is better than Hoyland. I think he is better than Hoyland.
Get the fuck out of here. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, Antoine.
You want to hear my nine boys? Mm-hmm. You guys are going to disagree again. And I'm ready for it. But I'm ready to defend it.
Okay.
Actually, no, I can't say it. What? Rodrigo Muniz.
No. Bro, oh my God. I literally saw that he has a bunch of goals this season. I was like, I know someone's going to put him on this list because they don't know what they're talking about.
And I am putting him on this list. Oh my God. You want to know the reason?
I would love to.
Where was Fulham before he came in the team?
You tell me, where were they?
And where is Fulham now?
Tell me, I don't know.
He has single-handedly... Okay, they had Raul Jimenez before him. Raul Jimenez is a total, I think, of like 4 Premier League goals.
Well, yeah, he also and he's almost died. Like, fuck.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point. Rodrigo Muniz came in the Fulham squad, and sure, it's a small sample size. I will admit that.
Yeah.
But he's fucking it's a very small sample size. But he's completely he has a player of the month. He has a player of the month.
Okay. He's still young too, eh? He's only 22.
Where is he, bro? Where the fuck is he? I'm trying to find him on the top scorers list.
Okay.
He has 8 goals, I think.
8? Okay, I've skipped past him then. That's a take.
It's an interesting take. Give it to Antoine to try and be a little different, which, you know what? It's okay. Like, no one's... It's okay.
I'm standing by it. I don't...
Yeah, 8 goals.
I'm not ashamed of that take because he's completely transformed a Fulham squad that was scoring zero... Like, that were not scoring any goals and that were deemed for relegation, and now they are safe, pretty much.
All right. Fair enough. Julian?
My 9 is Gabriel Jesus.
Oh, that's so terrible.
Why is it terrible?
That's so terrible. Because
he has a serviceable resume in the Premier League. Okay? And like you can't tell me that Rodrigo Muniz is going in ahead of him.
Of course not. Gabriel Jesus is so clear of Rodrigo Muniz. What? But
so you think he should be higher? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
he should or shouldn't be on the...
Who? Oh. Gabriel Jesus? He should be higher. Are you kidding me? You want to talk about resume?
Oh, you're saying I have him too low? Oh, okay. Bro, I thought you were saying he just shouldn't be on the list.
No, bro. What? He should be higher. Like this you want to talk about serviceable resume? This guy's led the line for City for like 4 years. I don't give a shit how many goals he scored.
And that's why he's on the list, but like he's not too high on the list because like...
Okay, I have him a little higher. Like not that much higher, but I might actually. I don't know. We'll see. I might change. But that's fair. That's fair. Okay, let's switch it up. Julian, give me your eight. I don't want to go first all the time.
The 8 is Rasmus.
Oh, God.
It's just no, bro. It's not. This is bias. We said take bias out of this. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm taking bias out of this.
You are not.
I'm taking bias out of this.
You think Rasmus Højlund's a better footballer than Gabriel Jesus is insane.
Availability is the best ability, first of all. Hmm. Second of all... If Rasmus Højlund got the chances that Gabriel Jesus have gotten over the years, he would have bagged more than that. And the number one objective of a striker is to put the ball in the back of the net. And that is what Rasmus Højlund does better than Gabriel Jesus. The hold-up play from Jesus is good. The link-up is good. He can play across multiple positions. He can drop back. He can do whatever. But the number one objective of a striker is to put the ball, kick it into the back of the net. And Gabriel Jesus, for a top elite Premier League striker, isn't the best at that. And I have to dock points for that. Rasmus Højlund... works off scraps at United and is still bagged a serviceable amount. Like while Antony and Garnacho and Rashford are getting like 6-7 shots a game apiece, Bruno too, he's working off like 1.5 a game. It's disgusting the amount of service that he gets, and he's still bagged enough.
He doesn't bag that much though, to be honest. Like, let's be real here. You act like he scores like 20 goals this season. He just has not.
I know, but if we're talking about conversion rate, then he bags enough. He bags a very elite amount.
Elite is crazy, but whatever. We can agree to disagree. That's fine.
Just what I'm saying is like, Hoyland is one of those strikers that needs service, and Holland is one of those too. You're like, we can't dock him points for needing service. However, like, you know, if you put him in like City, he would bag a lot. You put him in Arsenal, he'd bag a lot. If you put him in these teams that give him chances, even like a Chelsea, he would bag a lot. But United is just the worst possible team in the whole league for Rasmus Hoyland. But he's proven to me, he's proven to a lot of people that, like, he has what it takes, and if you give him the chances, he's gonna score. So that's why he docks points for you guys, because he hasn't got the numbers on the board. But if you actually know the reasons why he doesn't have it on the board, then you give him that discretion, and you're like, okay, yeah, maybe he is better than the numbers show.
Fair, okay, dude.
Sure.
Who's your eight, Blake? Who's your eight?
Go to Antoine, because I might change. Antoine, go. And
mine's Callum Wilson.
Antoine Semenyo.
Callum Wilson.
Okay. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that.
I think he would do a job at Arsenal, though. I'm still kind of sold on that.
I think he could, yeah.
I feel we tend to forget how good he actually was for Newcastle, even at the beginning of the season.
Chat, my eight's kind of crazy.
Don't say chat. All right.
I think my eight's Darwin Nunez, guys.
Okay.
I think my eight's Darwin Nunez.
I'm not agreeing with that.
And I look, like, he has like 20 goal contributions in the Prem this season. That's really good. However, this Liverpool side, is creative, and they have good players behind him. He's a decent finisher, but he's in that Jackson category a little bit, where he's missed a lot more than you would like him to. And his hold-up play is okay. Could use some work. He does make space. I think he has a lot of talent in him. I think in a couple years, I could see him being 3-4. He's played well this season. He hasn't even played terrible this season. I just think for one game, all of these players above him, I would rather take than him, if that makes sense. Like, for one singular game, the rest of these seven players who I have above him, I'd rather have in the team.
Yeah, it comes down to putting the ball in the back of the net again.
Yeah. Fair. We were just talking about that. And Darwin Nunez is completely opposite to Hoyland, where he gets every single chance possible, and he just doesn't convert.
Yep.
And he does have good, like, other aspects. Like, he is kind of like that Gabriel Jesus type, where, like, he does a lot. He does a lot of good. He can have a good game, but like, the amount of chances he misses, you're like, is the juice worth the squeeze? That's the thing with him. I think Liverpool will actually play better with him, to be fair, but...
Fair.
Is he on your list, Julian?
Yeah.
He's on your list?
He's on my list, yeah.
Okay. I can go to my seven if you want now. And
go on then.
My seven is Jesus.
Okay.
My seven is Jesus.
I'm on the same page, Blake.
Him. What's that?
We're on the same page.
Okay, fair. I was bouncing between him. I had him one place higher originally, but then I took it back. I took a step back and I said, okay, let me. I think this player above him, I think is maybe doesn't have better all around aspects than him, but as a finisher and as a player, he's better. But Gabriel Jesus just does so many things that are helpful to the Arsenal team. And like I said, he does have the resume. He didn't win a Champions League, but he won like 3-4 a million Premier Leagues with Man City. And he has the ability, which most quality strikers do, to create a goal out of nothing. I'm not saying he does it often, but I'm saying he has the ability to like bend one around a keeper or around a couple defenders or dribble through a couple players and pass it off, which doesn't mean he's the best striker in the world. It just means he has that elite ability to drive and spark a team out of nothing. And I think that's important.
I think that is important. But then he'll miss a 3-yard sitter the next minute, you know? So
no, that's no. The thing.
He has those moments of brilliance where he can just completely just turn a game upside down.
Yes.
Which is why, pretty big reason as to why he's on this list. He can just flip a switch and suddenly they have a goal.
Sure. Big up Anto. We agree.
All right, Jim. We've been agreeing a lot.
He has Nunez.
What number are we on?
Seven.
Seven? My seven is Dominic Solanke.
I think that's way too low.
I don't think so. I think that's fine.
Brother.
I think that's fine.
I look at the players above him.
How is that fine?
I think he's No, I think he's in that category of like borderline elite Premier League strikers. But I just look at the names ahead of him, and I'm like, man, I really.
You have Darwin Nunez above Dominic Solanke.
Yeah, that's great. That's insane.
That's insane.
That part is crazy. But Solanke is my six, so that's why him at seven, I don't hate, because he's my six.
I also give a little bit of this, like, you could call me a little biased for this, but if they're not on like a top six team, or like at a team at the top of the table, I dock points. Because how many times have we seen an elite Premier League striker on like a mid-table, bottom-tier side may have a big money transfer up to the table, thinking of Romelu Lukaku here, and then he stinks it up. It's because like the pressure is lower when you're playing for a Bournemouth. Or like,
you can't just dock points off of a hypothesis, brother.
It's not even hypothesis. Solanke is an ex-Chelsea reject.
He was younger. He was less experienced. Obviously, he's not going to perform well at Chelsea when he's however many years old he was. Same thing with all the other players that are ex-big club rejects.
But I look at the names above him. And
Mohamed Salah is a Chelsea reject.
That is true. That is true. But, you know, he's talking about him.
Third top goal scorer in the Premier League. What more do you want from him? You were talking about putting balls in the back of the net. That's way too low, brother. Seven or six?
I just take a little bit away from him. I don't know. He's still very good, but just the names above him, just much better.
With Solanke too, it's not just the goals he scores. It's also the hold up play that he provides for Bournemouth.
He's very good hold up play.
He's very good at it.
Which is why I wanted to put him higher, which is why I thought six was maybe a little too low as well. But I don't know, you look at the five players ahead of him in my sake, I think there's a sense of game killer, if you know what I mean. Like, there's a sense of, and maybe you're right, maybe it's top six bias or just good team bias. But I think there is a sense of, if Dom Solanke is in a Champions League final, which I know is a weird thing to think about, but if he's there, is that player the one who I think is going to perform for me? Or is it these other five guys who I just think have that experience?
So Darwin Nunez performs better in a Champions League final than Dom Solanke.
Hey, he ain't on my list. He ain't on my list that high. So
does he do that?
Who?
Does Darwin Nunez perform better in the Champions League final than Dom Solanke? A guy that can't even handle the pressure in the Premier League.
Fuck, man. I guess he does. I'm sticking by my list. Wow. Sticking by my list.
Fair.
So, okay. So, obviously. Hey.
We've all had stinkers so far, I will admit.
I think my list is great.
Actually, Blake.
I'm gonna be completely honest with you. While we were talking, at first I had my list. I had Solanke at six and I had Darwin at seven. But when we were talking about Darwin, I was like, shit, I should have him higher. So I switched them.
Ew.
Wow. So you have Darwin at six?
My original six was Solanke, but
your six is Solanke.
My six right now is Darwin because I switched.
Okay, fair.
Mine's Alvarez.
I'll stand by it. Ooh.
Again, Alvarez is my five. So I think now we're going to get a like just slight parity. So again, like I can't, one place off, I can't argue with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might have to do with the Pep rotation. I think he's an incredible player. I just don't think he does as much as his other striker on that team does.
Of course, of course. And it is an availability thing. Not that he's unavailable. It's that Haaland is the striker, right? And that's so he gets pushed to the wing, and I'm sure he doesn't love that. But when Haaland's out, Alvarez is...
I believe when Haaland's out, I'm bringing Alvarez in my FPL teabag.
He's like the best replacement you could ever think of. So
it's actually like a crime that City have
absolutely
these two on the same
team. Yeah, he's insane. So, Drew, who's your five then?
My five is Ivan Toney.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
You're five? Wait, we're on six.
No, we did
my six.
My six
is Darwin Nunez. Oh, right, right. Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
That's a little low for me. That's a little low for me.
Mine's Ivan Toney as well.
At five?
Yeah.
Me and Antoine agree? No.
Guys, are you kidding? Look, I know we had the bet. Guys, Toney is like... he is a... good fucking striker. Like, the flaws in his game are very, very minuscule.
I don't like his attitude. I know it sounds racist, but
it actually did not sound racist at all until you said that. So that's what we should be questioning. But no, so like I said,
Isaac isn't on my list. I'm joking. Anyways.
What?
I'm joking. I'm joking.
No, yeah. So my five is Alvarez, like we said. But so interesting. Yours is Tony. So
yeah.
Okay, so who's everyone's four then?
My four is Solanke.
Oh, that's crazy. That's a little crazy. That's a little crazy.
You think that's crazy?
I think he's... Trust me, I'm the Bournemouth fan here. Like, I love Solanke. I love this dude. However, I just think... I think Julian has a lot of plaudit to what he said. There's a lot of validity, and there's a lot of questioning to do with these smaller club strikers moving to bigger teams. So
you
that's why
say I say the same thing about Tony.
But Brentford have...
Also, Tony's done it. Like,
Tony's done it.
Like, Tony's been here. Hold on.
For 2 years.
Like, for even Solanke to be at six, like, that's, think about that. There's only five strikers that we would rather over Solanke. Like, that's really good. To say that about a Bournemouth side, who some people might have thought they were going to go down this season.
Hold the fuck on. Dominic Solanke also played for Liverpool. How did I forget this? All right. In 21 appearances, he bagged one goal.
Oh, how old was he, Julian?
This was 2019. He was there when they won the Champions League.
Dominic Solanke's a Champions League winner.
Yes, sir. I guess he is, bro. Okay. So you're four.
And then he went to Bournemouth. On loan.
Yeah.
In 2019, he made 10 appearances for Bournemouth in his first season, bagged zero goals. Then 32 appearances, bagged three goals. 33 appearances, bagged six goals. 34, bagged 18. So he's really just turning on this season.
Yeah, so what is the point of saying strikers this season if we're not going to look at this season?
Fair. That's why it's important.
Okay.
But that's why he's on the list in general, Antoine. That's why he's on the list, because of his performance this season.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're not just doing this season, right?
But he's on the list because of his performance this season.
Because, like, of course, yeah, you have to give him some plaudits.
100%.
But for me, plaudits is like seventh place on the list.
Fair. I'm saying I agree with you, Drew.
So who's your four then?
My four is Isaac.
Okay. Yeah.
Fair. My four is Alvarez.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Isaac at four, Blake.
Yeah. I think the flaws in his game are minuscule. I think his two-footedness is really, really nice. I think that is really nice. That's a big thing that is, for a striker, is really underrated, because it doesn't matter if the ball is coming in on either side of the wing or if it goes behind you or you have to lunge for it. I think that in itself is just such a really big thing for Isaac.
Yeah, that's why he's my three.
I already talked about Alvarez. He's just like unfairly elite.
Mm-hmm.
Led the line for Argentina when they fucking won the World Cup, bro. Like, it's insane.
Okay, so, yeah. So, you said Isaac's your three.
Yeah.
Drew, who's your three?
My three is Isaac as well. My four was Alvarez. My three is Isaac.
Is Blake forgetting someone?
No, because my three is Tony. My three is Tony.
Your three is Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have the two biggest candidates at top two.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
But hold on, can we all say our 5-3?
Tony over Isaac, Blake?
I think so.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think so. I think so.
Alvarez?
I think so. I just think when I watch both of them play, I'm genuinely terrified of Tony. Watching him play, like when he's on his game, I'm terrified. Isaac, maybe I'm not about that Newcastle grind right now, but there's just something about Ivan Tony that when he plays, like, any chance that falls to him, like, fuck. I'm scared. Isaac, I'm like, okay, maybe. Maybe we can get away with one. Maybe he'll miss it. Tony's just clinical. And I know it's been a little weird since he came back, but he's just got that killer instinct that I feel when I play against him, when Arsenal plays against him, and that's why I think he's number three.
I guess for me, it's like, Isaac has that, like, killer, like, approach that a striker should have, but he also brings so much more to the team as well. Like, he's played on the wing for Newcastle and he's looked so good. His dribbling is like insane.
Yeah,
so like
and for a tall guy too.
For someone as tall as he is too.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
Plus, he can finish. So, like, it's unfair. Plus, he's super young. Fair. Like, man, it's going to be scary times.
Yeah, for sure. And then 1-2 is obvious. So, whatever.
Is Watkins Haaland.
Watkins Haaland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you take an Ollie Watkins at Arsenal, Blake?
Oh, my God. What? Yes.
Okay, so we were talking about this. I was talking about how you should take these at least top six strikers at Arsenal. And I'm still agreeing with my point here.
Yeah, that's been insane.
Alvarez, you take at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Tony.
Yeah.
Solanke.
Yeah.
Brother.
I don't know.
It's just, there's not proven.
Because you can't even tell me he's not Prem proven anymore.
So, looking at my list, my top five is Haaland, Watkins, Tony, Isaac, Alvarez, then Solanke. Even though I think Solanke is better than Jesus, I suppose, I don't think that the gap between them is that vast. So that's why the top five I would take, on my list at least.
Dwayne, how many of these would you take in your Manchester United 11?
Bro, the whole squad. Paris. Fuck.
Yeah, the top 10 in it.
I guess I got seven guys over Hoyland, so I'd take those. Oh. I wouldn't take Solanke. I wouldn't take Solanke. And maybe not Tony, because I don't like his attitude.
Oh, my goodness. Actually, that's fair. You guys don't need more.
Solanke hate surprises me, actually. I thought you guys
It's were. Not hate. It's just...
As far as this season, he's hate. As far as his career, he's a one-season wonder.
Well, yeah. A little bit. He is. But he's also a player that strives off of confidence, and he's shown that this season, so I don't see why he wouldn't carry that on to next season.
You need some, like, superhuman confidence to work at Man United. And, like, nobody's going to get...
He's got the anime edits behind him, brother. He's good.
Nah.
If he scores 15 next year, then sure. But...
He's already 26, too. It's not like he's, like...
26 is prime age.
Yeah, he's got some years.
It's not like he's going to, like, get better. It's not like he's some youngster that's, like, going to be around for a while. It's, like... Just... You know?
Yeah. All right, but I think our lists are all pretty... The bottom of the list is a little more subjective.
The bottom was a little stinky from myself, I will admit.
If Heung-min Son counted as a striker, where would he be on your list, guys?
Like a solid four.
Second. He's second. What?
They're probably second for me.
He's over Watkins. He's better player than Watkins.
But he's not a striker, though. So he's right. It's like hypothesis again.
Still count him as a striker.
That's fair.
All right, fine.
Over Isak?
Who? Who? Son?
Son.
Son.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He's second, bro. Well, guys, do we
if
know...
If I was building a team, then no.
Guys, do we know who Heung-min Son is? He's, like, probably the third best Premier League player in the league. It goes Haaland. It goes De Bruyne. Pretty sure Son is third. Like, is there anyone... Maybe Salah? Okay, Salah, sure. Son is fourth. Son's not better than Saka. Saka's not better than Son. Foden's not better than Son.
Odegaard's
not better than Son. Like, come on, guys. This guy's like
interesting.
Heung-min Son is he's my Asian brother. I fucking hate him because we're from Tottenham, but like he's kind of you can't hate Heung-min Son. He's a great player.
Yeah, you know what? Two is a good.
Yeah. Alrighty, good list.
Should we do a little FPL roundup?
Oh yes, do it.
Oh, I guess FPL roundups is my thing, so sure. A bit of a shitty week for myself. I won't lie here.
Your week's not done, though.
Isn't it? I know. Yeah, 0-0 in the City game, 8 minutes in. Love to see it. But so I'm going to... I'll start with the shittiest, which was Miles, who triple captained Salah and got a whopping 50 points. The average was 57.
Salah, 9 points, triple captain. That's 3 points in two games.
Yeah, not a great sight for Mr. Miles over there. He is now more than 100 points behind Blake Talabas, who's in third, who had a 50. Okay, we have Foden to play still, and Vissa's coming in for Palmer. So right now I'm at 54 points, but with plus 13, I'll be at 67.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Minus
one. Gusto didn't play too. You have Doughty coming on for minus 1 point.
Will he come on, though? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, minus one. We'll see. Then we have the big guns. Two very, very special people in my heart who played absolutely fantastic this week, and they deserve all of their plaudits. Julian Betancourt with a 97. game week. He brought in Mateta.
With Garnacho to come on.
So 100-point game week. 100-point game week for Jew. It's quite sensational, and I'm eternally jealous for Julian. And then we have to give the utmost respect to Antoine Leonard for putting up a 133 game week with Mateta, Semenyo, Solanke up top, Captain Saka for 18, and Ben White with a brace with a Pickford 18-pointer clean sheet at the back. So, what a performance from the kid.
Disgusting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely, that was good, disgusting. Eh? That was pretty good.
What's your like your game week rank, Antoine? Can you see that?
Oh, I can't see that. Actually, maybe I can see that online. I will check that right now.
Because with 97 points, I'm only top 900K this game week. That's insane.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's like a million people bagged 100 points.
That's crazy.
Hey, Foden is good. I still have him on my bench coming on for Palmer. So
there you go. There you go. All right, Jude, take it away, baby.
All right, everybody. This has been a good week of pod. This has been fun. We've got to get Miles on.
I know. He'll be back. Like, don't worry.
He will be back.
125K, Julian.
125, solid, bro.
Nice.
Solid.
Very nice.
Boys, we're coming up on half a century of episodes.
Pretty special.
Very special.
We have to do something big for the big 50.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, for sure. Boys, I've enjoyed this one as ever. This is very, very solid. Very I think we got solid. Like this whole setup thing. We got the whole like setup thing down too.
I think we're good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. With that being said, boys, hope you have a great week of football over the next week. We'll talk again soon. And with that being said, Blake,
we out.
See ya.
See ya, everybody.